Okay, welcome to episode 3 of the BNB Connection. With me is Brad Schoenfeld. We're expanding our technological repertoire here and using our new HD cameras that we just bought. So we're all proud of ourselves for figuring this out. So this episode is going to be on periodization, and this is something that Brad and I sort of agree with and sort of don't agree with, but we've never really duked it out, so we want to talk about periodization here. So let's get started. For those who haven't listened to previous BNB connections, we just do 30-minute talks about whatever's on our mind, but we try to stick to one topic. So we've got 29 more minutes. This one's on periodization. Brad, what is periodization?
Simply stated, periodization is the planned manipulation of program variables to bring about a given fitness goal or given fitness outcome. And simply stated, it means that you, when we talk about program variables, they're sets, reps, so the volume of training, and that includes frequency, and you can throw in things like the speed of repetitions can be periodized. And really any program variable, anything that has to do with, we're talking resistance training here specifically, you can periodize endurance training as well. But you manipulate them always. And I think what kind of gets lost in some people, really the goal is to continue, to allow for continued progress without overtraining. Or overtraining might even be a misnomer here. It's really non-functional overreaching, because overtraining is a really more severe aspect of that.
Okay, so there, I just turned the light on. So periodization is just planning. Is that, or am I overly simplifying if I just say planning?
Well, it's planning in a way that, you're oversimplifying in the sense that it's planning in a way that will bring about, you can plan, but you can have bad plans. So it's the plan is to is basically not to keep pushing hard all the time. So it's to allow for, ultimately, if you're looking at what my concept of periodization is, it's to plan for having unloading periods so that your training basically continues on an upward trend overall without regressing on the long term.
But do you have to unload to do? Can periodization be just, hey, I'm going to focus on, like, here's my thing, and like, I don't like most definitions of periodization or most people's understanding of it, because most people think of periodization, they just think of like Western linear periodization, they think of undulating, they think of these different models of periodization, and you think of the charts where you see these, you know, zigzagging things and things like that. But periodization could also just be like, okay, I'm a personal trainer, I just got this beginner and they suck at squats, they don't have good ankle mobility, they don't use their glutes when they glute bridge, and they can't hip hinge. And so my first month I'm gonna really focus on quality instead of quantity. Brad, zoom out, your camera just automatically zoomed in. Real quick, you can see the difference between a New Yorker, see Brad being pale white, and see my nice tan in Arizona here. Just one reason why Arizona trumps
me. This is my Eastern European skin, and that is your Mexican skin. So.
Just one reason why Arizonians are superior to New Yorkers. But that could be a form of
intermingle enough. That was the problem, so I got this pasty skin. So.
That's periodization, right? I'm a personal trainer. I say, look, this first month, we're going quality, not quantity. They're going to focus on glute activation. They're going to focus on hip hinging. They're going to focus on, you know, I'm not going to worry about load. I'm really going to get their form looking good. And then, you know, next month I'll start to load them up more and be concerned with progressive overload or something like that. What if you have a new goal in mind? Hey, I want to try to really focus on my squat this month rather than my deadlift or something. Just doing a different program is a form of periodization. It's a different, You're just switching focuses, switching priorities. So I will argue that you can't, it's pretty hard to not periodize. Like, to not periodize, you just have to, you would have to go to the gym with no goal in mind and just train aimlessly and do completely different things and not care about, because almost everyone has goals and they say, I want my bench to go up or I want this to go up. So you're trying. But I will say most people don't periodize enough. They don't have any sort of rhyme or reason to their training. I would say the majority of people who train just go to the gym and they do body part splits. And they, you'll ask a lot of people, what do you do for your bench press? Oh, I do 135 for 15, then I do 185 for 10, then I do 205 for 6, and then 225 for like 2 or 3, and then I might do a back off set of 115 for 15 reps. And I'm like, you do that every time you go to the gym? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, would you ever go up? Do you ever increase your reps? No. And then other times, I'll say like, what do you do for chest? And they'll say, well, I'll just kind of go in and pick like three or four exercises. Sometimes I might do crossovers, then bench press, then push-ups. Then the next time I might do dips, and then close grip bench, and then flies. You know what I mean? And then there's no, there's it's like, okay, you're just doing complete muscle confusion without even trying to get better at one thing. So those would be two instances of really poor or a lack of periodization. And studies show that people who periodize see better results than people who do not, correct?
Not exactly. The actually the literature is very conflicting on it. And really, here's the issue with the periodized literature. There are a gazillion different ways to periodize. There's no periodization is really a concept. So if you do a, let's say you do a research study, you're gonna the researcher has his own model. Okay, I'm gonna do this particular thing today, and I'm gonna take it with a standard type of program that doesn't change up any variables. But that's just one potential way to do something, and there are literally a gazillion. So it really, that's part of the problem is that there is no such, periodization is really just a general concept. And so I think we're in agreement that planning is the essence of it. And one of my
Well, real
favorite
quick, let's talk about the variables. I wish I had thought about this beforehand or had written them down, but what are the variables you can tinker with? We've got the main ones are volume, intensity, and
That's
frequency. Volume and intensity are the most commonly periodized, but there's also frequency. So,
Frequent, hold on. Frequency is part of volume, really. I mean, within a, because if you can, let's say, have, if you add an extra day and keep the volume the same, you've increased volume for that week.
So, but there's also training frequency, number of days, and then training frequency, number of times you hit a muscle or a lift. So,
That's true, yeah.
it's that they're just kind of like intensity that we talked about last episode. There's intensity of effort and intensity of load. Frequency is kind of two things too. Frequency of
True.
days you train, and then frequency of the number of times you hit a muscle or movement.
Absolutely. Yep.
So volume, intensity, but intensity is two things. Frequency is two things. Then there's tempo. You could
Yes. Effort. You can periodize intensity of effort.
yeah. So we so there's volume, there's intensity of effort, intensity of load, frequency of training, frequency of times you hit a muscle or a movement, tempo,
Cadence. Yep, tempo.
or cadence or tempo. There's density, trying to get in more in a less time. There's would you say variety would be like
Variety would definitely be a type of periodization, yep.
you could what else is there? There's probably more we're
The
forgetting,
use of,
but
well, I mean, the use of other specialized techniques
yep. That's
can
what I
be
was thinking of, like
different.
doing
Heavy
drop sets
negatives,
or
drops, heavy
pop, yeah,
negatives.
right. Eccentrics, accentuated eccentrics or something, isometrics, things like that. But the most common, what would you say the most common forms of periodization are?
Common forms, well, linear and nonlinear are the two you're talking about
Yeah.
the
I would
model. Yeah,
also
so
say
your two
undulating.
basics are linear and nonlinear. But I do want to point out, and the thing you said at the beginning, that to me, one of my favorite phrases and I think most important adages with training is those who fail to plan, plan to fail. So if you just go into the gym, and planning is at the heart of periodization. You're just going into the gym and saying, I think I'm going to do this today, I think I'm going to do this, without having a real goal as to why you're doing it, you're destined to not get good results. And what periodization really tries to do is to find a way to systematize this. And how you go about it, we can argue, I know there's all sorts of things in the literature, is undulating better than linear. And I mean, to me, that's kind of missing the boat, because there's a million different ways to do linear periodization and a million different ways to do undulating. There's so many different...
But I think it's good for researchers to try to pit two periodization programs against each other and see which one works better.
Well, I don't disagree, but what is that really? That just tells you that particular periodization scheme used was...
If something's done 10 times and you see that linear always beats out whatever, nonlinear or something like that, then you could start to say, okay, I'm pretty confident about this.
But, here's the other thing you have to look at, though. The study is almost invariably a short-term in nature. And again, to me, what one of the real important aspects of periodization is to prevent overtraining. So really it's planning, but doing it in a way that where I do think that some type of unloading or not structuring it so that you're not always going balls to the wall, that you're allowing some type of variation in there so that you have downtime in some way and that you're not pushing it constantly is essential. And if you're doing a 12-week study, you're not allowing enough time for any of those factors to take place. So it's really not going to show up in something like that. You have to have... When we're looking at periodized routines, we'd be looking at the effects over months. You're talking 3-6 months, really, or more. Not a 8 or 12 week routine. There's not much you can see, and that's what really most of what the research looks at. Just because it's hard to do very difficult to do a 3 or 6, certainly a 6 month training study is a very difficult thing to accomplish. Really, when you're going out past 3 months, you don't get many studies that do that, just because of time-intensive nature and the cost of it.
So that's a great point. It's very, very hard to look at periodization in the research due to the time constraints. I have seen studies like on football players and stuff looking at year one, year two, but they don't control many variables. Well, they don't always. But, okay, so you pointed out a good pitfall. Now let's talk about some things about periodization, like I think my main thing is that, first of all, it's important to note that a lot of times people don't set records on, like, it's different with strength training versus athletics versus, so if you're just a lifter, like John Brose will tell you that the body, you know, what you feel is a lie, and well, I don't think he means just ignore everything your body says. It just means that you can't. It's unbelievable how many times you feel like crap but set a record, or you feel great and perform like crap. So it's very hard to predict human physiology, and human physiology is so dependent on so many factors for you to nail an event. I mean, look at sprinters. You know, they need to peak once every 4 years for the Olympics, and they rarely do it. It's a very, with sprinting is probably the one end of the extreme, you know. But for most people, they're just general lifters. Do general lifters, I agree that periodizing is a better approach. I agree that you should map out a plan. I agree that you should say, all right, here's what I'm going to do. And I'm a fan of competing. Pick a powerlifting competition or a bodybuilding competition or something that forces you to peak, or just say, I'm going to do a mock meet on this day or do a photo shoot on this day, because it holds you accountable. You then peak for this, and people who peak and who compete see better results because they push it. They're really focused. They push it really hard. And then afterwards you kind of relax, chill out. You're in the off season a little bit, and then you get refocused. So it's these natural times of intenser training and less intense training. But I totally agree that you get better results by periodizing. But I will tell you, I can't I can't believe how many, you know, having a lot of powerlifting friends, and I thought, you know, in the last couple of years that I've made, I thought the difference would be that you get these newbies and they just suck at their training. They don't periodize. They're program hoppers. They jump ship the second a new program comes out. They try to combine programs. They do three programs at once. There's no rhyme or reason to their training. They're just idiotic with their training. But I see the same thing with a lot of powerlifters. They do make the same mistakes that normal people do. It's just that they're genetically superior. They're just built to be stronger. But
Hold on. So the thing I think you're missing there, though, that doesn't mean there might be powerlifters. That doesn't mean they might not be getting better results if they plan.
Right. So that's what
we so often
that's the
look.
Question I wanted to ask you is how much better. So you get these. I will tell you, there's world-class powerlifters who, you know, I was reading about a guy who has the natural squat record. I forgot his name. Maybe it's like Rob Wilkinson or something. I don't know if he has the record, but he's this big, giant black guy that just legs like a tree trunk. And in an interview, he said he doesn't even really know what he's going to do when he goes in. He doesn't even have a plan, really. But he's going to squat, you know. And I see so many examples of guys who, you know, they just know they're going to be training a few. They don't really know what they're going to do when they go in, but they do have a general framework. So here's my whole point in the beginning was you might think those guys don't have a system, but they do have a system because they know what they can squat and they're trying to beat it. And if they feel like it, this tiny meager, he's got the strongest, shirted bench in the world. And he goes in, to bench, and he only like maybe once a month goes for a record. He once a month tries to really go heavy depending on how he feels, because he's benching like whatever it is, like 1100 pounds or whatever. He can't, if he feels off, he'll hurt something. So you can have a plan, but if you've got to have some flexibility in there, which is Mel Siff would call cybernetic periodization or autoregulation, or some people would just call it listening to biofeedback. But that's what I would like to talk about, two things. First of all, how important is, how much better is it? I mean, is it like if you don't periodize properly, you're going to see zero results, versus if you do periodize, you're going to see 100% results? Or is it more like you can get just 15% more gains when you have a good plan? I mean, that's my take, is kind of like, it helps to periodize, but there are lots of lifters who have good results when they don't follow proper or strict protocols.
Completely agree. And you can, there's so many people that train terribly and see very good results in terms of they see impressive results. That doesn't mean they couldn't see better. So I think, look, it depends, number one, how haphazard your training is. If you just have a terrible routine, you still can see some results, but you'll see poorer results. And the better you plan, ultimately, the better your results. But here's a couple of, just to go on what you said. Number one, I think having some type of water regulatory approach is really important, because if you're feeling bad and you're just pushing, you're not only you're not going to get the right results out of what you're doing, it's going to screw things up, but you can even push yourself towards overtraining or to non-functional overreaching in that type of context. But just as importantly, I think the other side is we shouldn't look at the nonlinear, linear in such a strict fashion, that really we want to just look at planning and how you go about it. I think the approach that you ultimately take needs to be based upon what your goals are. I think personally, I think if you want to peak for a certain event, then taking a more linear type approach makes sense. And if you're looking, like in team sports, et cetera, where you're looking just to get overall results over the course of a period of time, an undulating approach tends to make more sense. And there's hybrid approaches within that. So there's not, I think that's another problem with when we talk about this. We get very caught up in these type of models, if you will. And I think that that's really the wrong way to look at it, that the periodization, again, is just a concept. It's a planning concept. And how we go about doing it is very individual and needs to take in the autoregulatory aspects.
And you look at all these popular systems out there. Look at John Bro's approach. They train to a max every day. but it's a competition, Max. It's they go by how they feel. You don't force a PR if it's not there. It's a competition, Max. But there is some structure to the program. They're going to be doing the six lifts, the squat, the front squat, the clean, or the clean and jerk, the snatch, the power snatch, and the power clean. But they have a rigid, you know, these are the times they do their lifts, and this is how the work schedule is planned out throughout the week, but you don't really know what weights you're going to hit. You just know that over time, every 6 months, you want to be using greater loads than you were the previous 6 months. Theirs is a model built upon effort and work. You look at Westside, they're going to max out 52 weeks out of the year. They go heavy, but they rotate the maximal effort lifts. It's either a heavy good morning or a heavy box squat, seldomly a heavy deadlift. They do dynamic effort stuff. They do their assistance lifts. They have it dialed in for geared training because the powerlifting gear gives you the assistance at the bottom and you need to lock it out. So they do tons of, you know, stuff that's going to help their lockout. But I think they've got to, and they do dynamic effort stuff so it doesn't beat the crap out of them. So they're doing explosive work. And I think they've got an amazing system, but it's not rigid. They're going to try to max out every week on things, whether they get it or not, they don't really know. But then you've got other systems like, you know, Chico, you use strict percentages, you know, and some systems are based on, you know, you have your one rep max and you're going to use, you know, 60% of your one rep max and you're going to do these many sets and reps and the next week you're going to do this. And then you've got like 5-3-1, gym one, there's 5-3-1. But on your last set, if you can get more, you get more. So you aren't like, so that's a good little mechanism there for increasing the intensity because the intensity of effort, because if you just stopped at one, you know, but you could get five, you should probably push the envelope and get five. You're going to induce a better training stimulus. But then there are other systems that are, they keep you, they prevent you from overreaching, from overtraining, because they do hold you back. And like I sometimes when I train my clients, I know they could set a PR. I can tell because you can just tell. They just set a 3 rep max record or whatever. They look explosive that day, but I let it ride to the next week because I don't want them, you know, expending all their. You want it like a steamroller, you know? It's hard to get a steamroller in motion, but it's hard to stop it once it's in motion. You want to build up momentum and keep riding that momentum rather than just, you know, be greedy, get all your gains and then not have anything left.
Well, here's another point that I would say as far as periodizing. If you are looking to peak for a certain event, I train a lot of physique competitors, bodybuilders, figure type athletes, and if you are looking to, let's say, for a given competition, looking to have them peak, to me, I found the best results in pushing them towards a period of functional overreaching, where you create greater density over time. Now, if you just keep pushing the envelope, ultimately they're going to be dead. They're going to be overtrained, dead from a competitive standpoint by the time the competition is over the course of time. So you have to do it in a structured, systematic fashion, but then plan it so that the actual overreaching will take place in and around right before that competitive event. And that is so important. That's why if you're just pushing the envelope, by the time you're competing, you can't really get to a functional overreaching standpoint. You're either non-functionally overreached, which is basically overtrained, or you don't get that density and you basically fall short of that. So I think that is a really important facet in terms of periodizing to plan it out if you're going to have such an event that your training is really dense and very, especially from a volume standpoint, really heightened volume right before that competition, and then you have your deload.
So I like to think of it a lot of times like, you know, I have my it dip, you can set up your weekly schedule however you want. You can lift one day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days, four, five, six, 7 days a week, and there's ways to make it work for every one of those. But an approach I like is I like getting my, I like having Sunday off, and sometimes I'll take Saturday off, but I like feeling a little bit beat down by the end of the week. And then I eat big over the weekend, I rest, and then I come back the next week ready to roll again, and then the process repeats. And that's functional overeating because I come back stronger. But if I didn't come back stronger, it's not, you're not doing it right. But some things I want to talk about. We've got 5 minutes left. In the literature, tell me if you'd agree with this, Brad, because I've got like 50 papers on periodization. Linear periodization can work very well. A lot of people think that it doesn't.
Yep.
I would say out of the studies...
Yeah, that's given what your goal is. Again, linear periodization really, it's the focus of it, and it was developed towards Olympic type, towards Olympic events, where you're going to peak at a certain period. If you're doing a sport-specific type of thing, the undulating approach, I mean, you... Let's say you're a baseball player and you're peaking right before the season, then you're trying to maintain during the season. You're getting worn down during the season. So I'm not, personally, I think a lot of times for many of the team sports that the undulating approach is a better way to go.
That's a good point. With sports that have frequent games, a lot of these models go out the window because you can't, you're not peaking them. And
or you're not maintaining, you can peak, but then you don't maintain. It's very difficult to maintain it.
I tell a lot of my coach friends, you know, like depending on the, if they've got freshmen, football players, sophomores, they build strength throughout the season because they're young, they're immature, they're not, they haven't been training properly. So that's a misnomer that you can't build strength during season in sports. But you would want to reduce volume to account for the more games that you're playing. In the literature, when I see that, I would give the edge when linear is pitted against like daily undulating periodization. I would give the edge to daily undulating periodization. I've personally, the studies I have, I've seen more that, but again, like you say, they're shorter studies. They're eight to 12 weeks or so. I would also say that when autoregulatory training is incorporated into the mix, that leads to better results. And there's amazingly complex periodization models and books written on it. And then there's great researchers who have critiqued those models, like Ishurin, what is the guy's name?
Bob Pfaff have to be one of the best books on periodization. What I really like about their book, they use the step loading. They discuss step loading in depth, and that to me is a very important aspect of creating kind of a wave. Like, I think it's important to have
Did
these.
You say Bompa?
Yeah, Tutabompa and Greg Half.
A
great job. It's called Periodization in the book.
Yep. So there's lots of good systems, but I guess what I want to end with is my two main takeaway points with periodization. Number one, because I think a lot of personal trainers and strength coaches watch our stuff, Brad. So for what I want to conclude with is you're probably periodizing your stuff, whether you know it or not. You're probably doing a good job of it, so be confident in that. Yep. Number two, you don't have to have this crazy knowledge of, it might benefit you as a trainer or coach to learn these different models, but I have had great success just kind of winging it. I know what I want my athletes and clients to do. I know what my goals are, but I don't have strict guidelines like today they're going to do this. I don't write out their programs 2 months in advance. I go by what I see and what I feel, but I know what I want to achieve. And you can see really good results that way. Not to say you couldn't see better results if you were more structured, but just saying don't feel bad if you don't have all these periodization models down pat. And number three, listen to biofeedback. That is such a critical component to good program design, because you can never predict how the body will feel and perform, and you have to be ready to adjust. Any program on paper is just a guideline. You have to adjust depending on how you feel. Some days you push it. It's kind of like that Kenny Rogers song. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
And by the way, I would also point out when we talked about unloading that I would say the majority of people don't train hard enough to need unloading periods. So You know, when I'm working with a bodybuilder or a figure competitor, these are people that are really at the top of their sports and they're pushing themselves. And those are the people who are certainly athletes, even some of the hard training recreational athletes sometimes. But most people, I mean, as a trainer, 80% of the people I work with never would train consistently hard enough where you'd need that. You basically, their period is that their unloading was built into the types of training.
That's a great point. I always say there's overtraining, there's also undertraining.
And most people are undertraining.
And there's getting it just right. And like I like to think that I've gotten to a point where I know my training just right. So I don't overtrain, I don't undertrain. And but we've got 30 minutes and 30 seconds now, so we are done here, Bradley. Thank you very much. This is hopefully this all works when I transfer it to YouTube's, to the interwebs. But thank you, Bradley, as always, and we will be back next week. We don't know what the topic will be, but we'll figure something out. Thanks for watching.
Later, guys.